Gabriel, I am switching over to this. I'm going to try the lapel today. Well, I am excited about, that's a little loud. I am excited about returning to Genesis. The last time we were here was actually the middle of November, and I was working on this passage, and my computer said, nah, I don't want you to do it, and so it lost, shut off and lost the whole sermon, and so I guess the Lord has something else and wanted us to wait till the end of January to get back to Genesis 40. So I trust this is what the Lord has to speak to us about today. But we are in the last major section of the book, the study of the life of Joseph. And I'll confess to you, sometimes I feel like a broken record. And maybe some of you parents will have to explain that reference to the younger generation that may not know what that is referencing. But sometimes I feel like a broken record because I just want to state again what I continually try to keep before us. And it is this, that your understanding and view of God, in other words, His character, His attributes, His being, all of that affects how you respond to life, and especially to life's disappointments and setbacks and injustices, the unfairnesses that touch your life. It affects how you wait on the Lord, particularly when His timetable is different from your timetable. It affects the level and the endurance of your trust. All of that is affected by your understanding of God and who He is. And so last time when we were in chapter 39, we saw how Joseph stood for us as an example of what it looks like when a person is committed to trust in the Lord regardless of their circumstances, be they good, be they bad. Joseph was a great model for that because we saw whether in success or setback, whether in favor or injustice, Joseph's response did not change. He continued to trust, or better yet, he continued to entrust his life and his situations into the hands of the Lord. I like the word entrust. That carries a little different nuance, I think. So Joseph kept entrusting his life and his situations into the hands of the Lord. But this choice we saw as he walked through chapter 39 stood behind everything that happened to him, and thus it enabled him not just to endure, but to rise above all the unfairnesses and injustices and the cruelty that happened to him. And I think that's something, as we watch that and witness that, that's something we would like to be able to say is true of our life, that in the midst of all the disappointments and hurts and injustices, that we just wouldn't endure them and bear them, that we would rise above them just like Joseph did. We've got to learn that lesson because they're going to come. We can't escape that. That's part of life. And so we saw with Joseph in the high times, in the low times, in the confusing times, in the unfair times, his trust was constant in the Lord. So let me just do a quick review of how we saw this in chapter 39, of this truth, because we're just going to continue to build on it as we come to chapter 40. And so I outlined it, I put it in the present tense because you and I face many of the same types of situations that Joseph did. So as we walked through chapter 39, the first thing we talked about was we saw Joseph trusting God when he was betrayed by his own family. And we experience betrayals in our lives. He trusted God when it was not easy going. In other words, he was sold into slavery, moved to a foreign country, had to learn a foreign language that he did not know to be able to do his work and to ascend to the position that he had. And so it wasn't easy going for him in the beginning, but he trusted the Lord for what he had need of. Thirdly, he trusted God when blessing and achievement came, and that can be a real test for us because, yeah, when we're really beat down, it's natural to cry out to the God. But when great success comes, then we can kind of forget about him and rest on what we have accomplished. And yet we saw with Joseph, he continued in that same element and level of trust, even when the good times, so to speak, but the blessings came. And then we saw trusting God when he was tempted to sin, when Potiphar's wife kept coming to him. And we'll mention that again in a little bit this morning. And then last one we looked at was trusting God when one's convictions cost you. And that can be a real test. Lord, I've done what you've told me to do. I've honored you. And man, I've been beaten down because of it. And yet Joseph continued to trust even in the result of those convictions that cost him. Well, today we come to a new chapter, chapter 40, new scenes from Joseph's life. But we find the same Joseph, that still he's trusting the Lord regardless of his circumstances, regardless of the situation, regardless of the disappointments. And so we're going to pick up two more examples of this trusting that we saw in chapter 39. We're going to call this first one, trusting God while you wait. And that entails most of the chapter. But trusting God while you wait. As we enter chapter 40, Joseph is still in jail because of, one, his conviction to not take advantage of his high position in Potiphar's house. Number two, not to violate Potiphar's trust in him. But more importantly, number three, not to sin against God as Mrs. Potiphar came and continually tempted him to be with her. And those convictions, as we said, cost him this very important position that he had worked so hard for. It cost him dearly. And so here he is in jail as we enter chapter 40. We don't know how long he'd been there. He was 17 when his brothers sold him into slavery. We find out next time that he was 30 when he was released from jail. But we know at least 2 years of that was in jail because there's 2 years that go by after the cupbearer is released. And so that leaves us with 11 years where he was either in Potiphar's house or in jail. We don't know what the breakdown of those 11 years. But think back with me for a moment. God had given Joseph two dreams that had indicated that he would attain some kind of lofty position where at least his family would end up bowing down and honoring him. But at this point, it's been years since he's seen his family. He's hundreds of miles away from them in a dungeon in a foreign country. So it appears those dreams are about as far away as coming to fruition in his life as he could get. But Joseph kept entrusting himself and his situation to the Lord. And we've already had a hint of that at the end of chapter 39 when he was cast into the jail. But it told us that God was still with him. God's favor rested on him to the extent that he gave him favorableness in the light of the jailer, so that he put all the prisoners under Joseph's charge. He didn't even bother to even supervise anything because he knew he could trust Joseph. And so I think that was an indication that even in that situation, Joseph was still entrusting God so that God was able to bless him even in that. So let me just make this point. Joseph's convictions cost him dearly, but that didn't stop him from continuing to trust in the Lord. It's just an important thing to keep in the back of our minds, because sometimes we hear stories, maybe you've battled it as well, but horrible thing happens, hard trial comes, and it's easy to say, what good did it do to keep trusting the Lord? Look what happened to me. And yet, but Joseph, he continued. And so here he is, he's in jail for so many years. We don't know exactly how many, as I said. He can't get out. There's no appeal process. He's stuck. And yet, he's still trusting and waiting on God to bring a fulfillment to those God-sent dreams that God had given to him. But you know, as you think about waiting, we can wait with a complaining spirit, can't we? We can wait with a begrudging spirit, can't we? We can wait with a complaining spirit. And yet, I think I would suggest to you at least the responses we see here with Joseph would indicate that he had not given in to any of those kinds of attitudes or responses. So let's look at chapter 40. As it begins, there's a new development. We are introduced to the chief cupbearer and the chief baker. These were important men in Pharaoh's court. The cupbearer was more than just the man who took a sip of the wine before handing it to Pharaoh to make sure it wasn't poisonous. This was a man who was always by Pharaoh's side. So he really was a confidant and even a counselor to Pharaoh. The baker was the one who ensured the quality of all the food that was placed on Pharaoh's table. But something happened, we're not told, that enraged Pharaoh to the extent where it tells us, verse 3, that he put them in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard, which was the jail Joseph was in. By the way, who is the captain of the bodyguard? Potiphar. And it says in verse 4 that he was the one who put Joseph in charge of these two men. So while Potiphar hasn't released him from jail, obviously it indicates he still sees the specialness about Joseph, that he put these guys under Joseph's charge. But here's an important thing for us to get. As I said, we don't know what these men did to enrage Pharaoh and subsequently punish them by putting them into jail. But here's the point. Whatever the external reason was, really is not important. The important thing was they're put in this jail so that God will use it to bring them and Joseph together. So Joseph and the cupbearer meet one another. That was really what was in the sovereign plan of God in all of this, to bring Joseph and the cupbearer together. I mean, isn't it amazing how God uses the good and the bad, the unfairnesses, the sins and the wrongs of other people to accomplish his plan in us, to benefit us? That's just stunning when you think about it. He's using Pharaoh's enragedness at these two men to bring about the meeting of Joseph and the cupbearer so that could be used later on for Joseph's release. Now understand, Joseph didn't know that, did he? He didn't know what we know. But that's why you keep trusting while you wait, because you don't know usually what the Lord's doing. You don't usually know how he's using things that will be an eventual benefit to you. And so you keep trusting while you wait. Well, after a while, there was verse 5, both of these men have a dream on the same night. So let's just read verse 6 and 7 real quickly. Verse 6 and 7. When Joseph came to them in the morning and observed them, behold, they were dejected. He asked Pharaoh's officials who were with him in the confinement in his master's house, "Why are your faces so sad today?" So what you see here is during this time of waiting on the Lord, Joseph was faithful. But I would suggest to you, he went beyond just the standard oversight of prisoners to actually caring about them. I mean, why else would you care if a prisoner looked downcast? He ought to look downcast. He's in jail. I mean, prisons are full of downcast people, right? So there was something on this day that was beyond the normal downcastness, if I could say it that way. Something beyond the normal downcastness in these men. And in verse 4 states, they'd already been there for some time. So again, there was something different this time. Something different in their faces, in their countenance. And the point is, Joseph noticed it, and he asked them about it. So just take note of something. When a person is consumed with anger and or bitterness, especially because of injustice done to them, they're pretty unlikely to take interest in someone else's problems. So I think this tells us something about Joseph's demeanor at this point. Someone who's been consumed with anger and bitterness because of injustices, I mean, they're too focused on themselves and all the wrongs that's been done to them. And yet here is Joseph. He cared that these two men looked particularly downcast and sad on this day. And so can I say this to you? One of the keys to living like Jesus is being other-centered, because that's what Jesus did. And if you remember when I was laying out the year verse to you, as we looked at the context that it's in, remember there were four commands, and three of the four commands were other-centered related. So if we're going to be a true follower of Jesus and following his steps, it requires us being others-centered. I mean, Joseph, he could have easily justified self-centeredness in his own life, right? Could have easily said, I got to take care of myself right now because everybody keeps giving me the shaft. I don't have time to be concerned about someone else's problems, particularly a prisoner's problems. They got so many sad stories. And yet what we see is him caring for them. So Let me state this truth. Catch this now. Three statements I'm going to make to you. The first one's this. The result of entrusting yourself and your situation to the Lord is that you are free, number one, to be faithful. And number two, you're free then to be others-centered. One of the results of entrusting your situation to the Lord is it frees you to be faithful and to be able to focus on the problems and issues and the things of people around you. But also, second statement is, Joseph did not know, for it was impossible really for him to know, that by taking care of these men, he was actually advancing the cause of his own freedom. He didn't know that. We do because we know the story. But he didn't know that. And so it leads me to this third statement. We never know how some action will have significant impact on or in our lives later on, positive or negative for that matter. You never know. Joseph didn't know how that was going to impact his life, eventually lead to his freedom. And you and I don't know how some action, positive or negative, can have a tremendous impact in our lives later on. So what I'd like to do at this point in the story is just stop and ask ourselves a few questions. Question number one, will you be faithful where you are, even when life might seem to make no sense, or even when you've experienced some injustice or some unfairness? Will you, like Joseph, still make it your determination, I'm going to be faithful to the Lord? Second question, will you faithfully serve God right where you are, even when you'd rather be somewhere else? Maybe a different job, different situation, whatever. Joseph would much rather have been somewhere else. But he faithfully served God right where he was, in spite of that. Third question, will you choose to be others focused? Instead of wallowing in what's going on in your life, and the injustice or the trial or the insensitive person or family member or whatever, will you release that to the Lord so that you can be focused on other people and let God use you? Use your gifts so that God is magnified through Jesus Christ. I mean, just stop and think for a minute. What would have happened, or better yet, what would have not happened if these things had not been true of Joseph? Yeah. I mean, at least in the human realm, his future would be entirely different if these things had not been true of him. All right, there's another aspect that points to the fact that I believe Joseph was trusting God while he waited, and that had to do with his response to the men's dream. Look at verse 8. He states to them, after they told him they had dreams, he said, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell it to me, please." And I think what's revealing here is that after all that's happened to Joseph, that he didn't respond in the way maybe people would have anticipated him responding. In other words, he didn't say something to the effect of, "Yeah, I used to believe in dreams too, and look where I am now. You might as well forget about dreams. There's nothing to them. There's nothing significant about them. Just forget about it because my dreams never came true." So I would suggest to us that Joseph's willingness to interpret these men's dreams meant he had not given up yet on his God-given, God-sent dreams. Even though many years had passed, even though he had endured rejection and betrayal and false accusation and imprisonment, down deep inside, I believe he was still trusting that God in his time would bring a fulfillment to his dreams. And so therefore, he was willing and free to be God's instrument to interpret these two men's dreams. Now, let me quickly offer one reason why these guys were probably so distressed. In the Egyptian culture, it was believed that the gods communicated to you about your future through dreams, but the gods didn't interpret them. And so therefore there arose this professional class of interpreters who would use their dream books, which were compiled from previous dreams and how they'd been interpreted and the symbols in those dreams. And so here were these two men. They had two specific dreams, but they had no interpreter that could tell them how what this dream meant in terms of their future. And so therefore, they're distressed. And so Joseph's response to them, first of all, had to be encouraging. But second of all, notice it's very instructive, is it not? Because he declares to them in verse 8 that the interpretation of dreams was not some pseudo-science by specialist, but the interpretation of dreams came from the Almighty God Himself only, and that He could give them the interpretation. So I'm going to skip over talking about the actual dreams and Joseph's interpretations. We read that earlier, and that's pretty self-explanatory. But I would like to call your attention to verse 14, Joseph's comment to the chief cupbearer. Verse 14, it says, "Only keep me in mind when it goes well with you, and please do me a kindness by mentioning me to Pharaoh and get me out of this house." Yeah, I don't have any doubt that Joseph probably prayed regularly for God to get him out of prison. He had hopes, obviously, that God would do that. After all, it was based, again, on his God-sent dreams. And so, yes, he was trusting while he waited, but he also wanted out, right? So it's possible to properly trust and wait and yet still want your situation to change. I don't think anything's wrong with that. The question is, what are you doing during that waiting time? How are you responding during that waiting time? And Joseph provides a good model for us. So in light of the interpretation God gave him to the cupbearer's dream, I would suggest Joseph probably had some very high hopes, heightened hopes, that soared in responses, maybe thinking, so this is how God's going to get me out of this prison. This is the means God is going to use to finally answer my prayers. As I was reading and studying this week, there were several people, commentators and scholars and Bible teachers and so forth, who believed Joseph was wrong to ask this of the cupbearer, that it showed a lack of faith. And I disagree. I just think Joseph probably saw this as the means God was going to use to bring an answer to his prayers. We do that all the time. And so I think that's probably how he looked at that. And so therefore, I'm sure his hopes rose. But here's the problem, potential problem. When we have high hopes and they're not met the way we are anticipating them being met, what happens? Disappointment descends upon us. And we could give testimonies about the battles we can get into when disappointment hits, right? And some of them can be pretty severe. So it's huge how we respond to that disappointment. Huge. Because it can send us reeling, or it can just give us another reason to affirm our trust to the Lord. So here's Joseph's interpretation. It revealed that these things were going to happen in 3 days. They did. The cupbearer was restored. The baker was executed. So here is Joseph. He's been trusting God during this time while he's waiting for God to work on his behalf. But now comes another big test in this concept of trusting God. And we're going to call this one, Trusting God When Disappointment Hits. And it's the last verse of the chapter, verse 23. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. You wonder what the next few days after the cupbearer was released, what those days were like for Joseph. Surely he had high expectations, don't you think, those first couple of days? Maybe for the first time had a little bit of an excitement as he woke and started his duties. But then 1 week went by, and a second week went by. And by the end of the month, surely the realization must have set in that the cupbearer had forgotten him or wasn't going to do anything about his request. And he was not going to be released. And then, bam, that big D must have hit him, disappointment. How do you respond, as I already said, how you respond at that point is absolutely critical. I'm supposing, I'm guessing, because of human nature, I would guess there had to be this transition between Joseph's high hope for his release and his readjusted hope in God alone. And in that transition, maybe there was a struggle with hope and trust. It may have been very brief, we're not told, but that is human nature. When something like that happens, to have that element, that time period, brief as it may be, where you're struggling with hope and trust. You know, there's other great men in the Bible who experienced that. If you remember when David was on the run from King Saul, and God had promised David that he was going to put him on the throne of Israel, but at a particular low point in David's life, he said this, "Now I will perish one day by the hand of Saul." You know, he knew the promise, but he was living in the middle of the reality. He was in the middle of the story. The Apostle Paul, we laud him as a tremendous man of faith, but if you remember in 2 Corinthians, he talked about that during his time in Asia, it says he was burdened excessively beyond his strength, so that, Paul said, quote, he despaired even of life. So Paul even battled that at times in his life, when he was in the middle. When he was in the middle. So even though I would suggest to you Joseph was trusting in God, not the cupbearer, he probably still had to fight off those feelings of despair. The man had let him down. And you know, sometimes it can be a very short step when people let you down and being disappointed in them to being disappointed with God. You know, maybe he prayed. I don't know. Lord, make him remember. Lord, make him remember. Please bring my situation to his attention so that I can get out of this prison. You know, as we read in the very first verse of the next chapter, 2 long years would take place before he would get out of prison. 2 long years. No answer from God. But all the time, I believe God was still working to refine and mature Joseph. Someone said, I don't know who this man is, Raymond Edmond, but he said, delay never thwarts God's purposes. It only polishes his instrument. And I believe that's what he was still doing in Joseph's life. Still polishing him for the high position he was going to get him. You know, how often in our own experience have we hoped that some person or some new development would be the means God would use to bring an answer to our dilemma? And so our hopes kind of rose a little bit as we thought about this person or this new development. Our hopes rise, but then it turns out not to be. And yet it's often in that very delay that God teaches us that our trust must be in Him alone, not even in the instruments or the means he uses, but only in him alone. Maybe that's some of what Joseph was learning these final 2 years in jail. God wants to use our disappointments to strip us of all hope in ourselves or even in his means. You know, and there's times when we honestly believe that our hope truly is in God. And yet what God does is he comes and he tests us for the purpose of proving that or deepening that, just like he did with Abraham and the offering of Isaac. And so Joseph, by faith, clung to God, who did prove faithful to him. And while the cupbearer did forget, God did not forget. So, here's the example Joseph has left of these 7 statements of him trusting God in the different situations that touched his life. And we all face similar types of situations, and so they're an example and they are a model for us. And so here's the challenge for you and me. If Joseph could live this way, and he had a fraction of the light that you and I have, If Joseph could live this way, it means you and I can live this way too. There's no reason why we can't. We have so much more than Joseph had. But may I suggest we will need the encouragement of, number one, God's Word. We will need, number two, the encouragement of interaction with the Lord through prayer. Number three, we will need the encouragement of the worship with and the fellowship of the saints. And number four, we will need to rely on the gracious supernatural provision and work of the Holy Spirit in our lives. But we can live this way, just like Joseph did. So as we've looked at these situations that touched his life, we're called to face the reality that basically you and I, as followers of Christ, are simply called to live a life of trust no matter what the situation, no matter what the circumstance, a life of trust in who God is and what He desires to accomplish in our lives. So I'll leave you with these questions. Number one, where is the Lord calling you to trust Him today? Or to put it another way, where is the Lord calling you to entrust, or maybe to continue to entrust a particular situation to Him because the answer hasn't come yet? So where is He calling you to continue to entrust that situation to Him? And what will be your response to those two questions? I want to do something a little different to close today. I'm going to ask David to come. And I mentioned to you last Sunday, he had a story to tell of where he was put in the position of having to entrust an unfair, unjust situation that touched him at work, and how God led him to do that, and the response as he entrusted that to the Lord, the response God then wanted David to have. And I think it would put a good explanation point on the what we have talked about today. So David, you can either stand down here or come up here. I'd like for you to use the mic, if you don't mind, please. So either down there or come up here, whichever one you want to do.
I'm not used to using a mic. Probably many of you have had a very similar situation to what I was just going to share. And many of you may have already learned my lesson before me. So I don't intend to tell you anything brand new, just to share what the Lord showed me. But we just had a very complicated, difficult situation at my sign shop. I have to order supplies from manufacturers that fabricate stuff for us. And something came in and was all wrong. And it was the wrong size. And we had to go back and forth, and it was a new supplier, and I had signed the thing off not realizing some of the measurements, and they had messed up royally on charging me for a larger size and actually delivering a smaller one. So there was fault on both sides, and I recognized that. I tried to get them to say, let's be fair about this, you know, we have to redo it, let's split the price, let's do it right, and I'll take my part. But they just didn't want to do that. They wanted me basically to just pay full price again. And I said, this is totally unfair. I just don't understand why you're not working with me. And it's very complicated, so I won't go into all that. But I think you may have had these times when maybe it's interpersonal relationships or things similar to this where you just, it kind of churns around inside, you know, next time I get on the phone with him, I'm going to really let him have it. Or, you know, I could just tell him, well, this, and you just going around and around and around in your mind. And he had finally said, because he was going to be somewhat of a credit, which basically brought me back to square one with paying for the smaller size and then having double pay for the big size. So there was some credit that he offered there. In my mind, we weren't getting to where I was thinking was fair. I had another job in-house with him, and it was ready to ship, and they wanted final payment for that. So they said, well, here's the money you still owe on that. We're ready to ship. And I said, well, I have a credit that I was told could be applied to this. And they said, oh, okay. And so they resent it again with a small little credit. Not even the amount that he told me. And I thought, well, give me a break. I had to fight for everything, you know. And it just, I was coming home that night and I just was churning around and I kept saying, Lord, you don't want me to lose my peace over, you know, just getting angry. The man didn't seem belligerent or anything, but they just weren't being fair. And you can pray about a situation, Lord, you know, straighten out his brain and help him to see right. You know, you can pray about it, you know, but I just really felt challenged. Like, I want a resolution to it, but I don't want to lose my peace by just doing this continual cycle of thinking of how I can tell him, you know, once we've got these jobs over with, we're not doing business with you anymore, and you can forget it, and blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm not one that really, you know, lets him have it, but I felt like I could on this one. anyway, the Lord, and it just touched me afterwards. I don't have many times like this, but I just sensed the Lord saying to me, why don't you pray for him? And not pray about the situation, but pray for him. Pray a blessing on him. Pray, and I said, well, Lord, how would I mean, many of you may have had, I don't really have a whole lot of enemies, but Jesus does say, you know, pray for those that curse you and those that despise you. And, you know, he says, bless them. Lord, I don't know how to do that. You know, I don't feel like doing that to this man. But the Lord just challenged me to pray for him. So I said, Lord, I pray for his family. You bless his family. I don't know if he's married or has children. I bless him at work. I didn't know quite how to. I just did the best I could to bless him in prayer. But I just felt like the Lord was telling me to do that. And I just felt a release when I just did that. And just prayed for the man. And I didn't know, you know, how it was going to turn out. You know, I just was on my way home, and that's just how I left it. And I got to work in the morning, and they had responded saying, oh, I'm sorry, we messed up, you know, and they gave me the full credit. So the Lord worked it out. But the Lord wanted to do something in me, too. So anyway, that's the story. Praise the Lord.
It was just an example of an unfair situation to the Lord. It doesn't always turn out like that, or especially that quickly. But the challenge was, Lord, I'm going to trust this to you, and then I'm going to be faithful in responding how you have led me. That's what Joseph was doing so often, trusting this situation, and trusting this situation, and trusting this situation. Now, Lord, what do you want me to do in the midst of it? And he was faithful. So it's not just in the Bible, real life, and that's what God calls us to do as well. So let's pray. Is there some situation, some person, the Lord's asking for you to entrust into his care or entrust again? Do you need to do that right now? Lord, thank you for the lessons that Joseph models for us. It's quite remarkable to see this man in whatever situation, high or low, entrusting it to you and seeking to be faithful to the place you have for him at that moment as he awaits for you to bring fulfillment to the plans, the dreams that he believes you had given to him. Lord, help us to trust you when we're in those waiting times. Help us to trust you when disappointment comes. And help us to be faithful in the areas of responsibility we do have. In those areas, in those situations, you have allowed to touch our lives, not knowing how how maybe you intend to use those later on in our life for something significant. Not knowing how you are wanting to use that for our eventual good. So remind us of the lessons we've seen in chapter 39 and 40. May they bear fruit in our lives so that